guys, welcome back to the Misfits and Mysteries podcast. You guys know by now we are your weekly podcast for all things weird and wacky, from aliens and Bigfoot to psychology and history and everything in between. We are your hosts, Emmy.
And Steve.
So, Steve, how are we doing?
Good, how are you? I'm loving this winter storm. I mean,
I
it's a
know.
bit of a pain. I know you're stranded. That's why your audio quality is not as good today, but it's not bad.
I
We'll have a good
know.
show.
For everyone listening, I do not have my mic today because I went skiing in Vermont this weekend and couldn't get back to New York City because there is a winter storm.
We have like 18 inches here.
I couldn't get back to New York City and I couldn't stay where I was in Vermont. So now I'm crashing with a friend in Connecticut and it's a whole thing.
At least you got out of there.
I know. I had a feeling that I would be stuck in Vermont for maybe the rest of my life.
I mean, it will melt eventually, but not for a little while. Do you know what the Isle of Man's flag looks like?
No.
Google it right now. Like, this is actually insane. I came across this today.
All right, let's see. This better be good. Oh, what?
That's like three legs in like a fissure. It's bizarre.
It kind of looks like a swastika.
It does, but if you actually click on it, those are three legs.
That is disturbing.
It is the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
Oh my God, and they're selling like masks, they're
They're
selling
selling leggings.
pajamas.
There's boots with it on.
That is really, how did you find that?
Someone on our Twitter posted like a screenshot and it said something like, we're now being listened to in like 32 countries. And then I saw the Isle of Man. I'm like, is that fake? So I had to Google it.
Where even is the Isle of Man?
I don't know. It used to be part of like England, but I don't really know what the deal is right now. But I just felt like I needed to share that.
That is too funny.
Yeah. So another thing is, I have a hypothetical for you, actually. It's pretty good. I
Oh.
texted you about this to prepare. I didn't tell you what it was, but I wanted you to start thinking. So last week, I took a day off because I had night terrors, if you will. So I was like, fuck this. I can go to bed till like 3. I'm like, I'm not working today. So I just watched movies on my couch all day long. And I watched the original Westworld, which it is interesting in its own right. It's actually a good movie. Did you ever watch the show Westworld?
I did.
So
Yeah.
it's really interesting, the movie from 1973, because how different our fears about robots are now. Because back in 1973, the big fear was that the robots would kill people, right? Whereas the whole premise of the show is that they've gained sentience. The same thing's happening, but there's different underlying fears, which is fascinating in its own right, which we'll
Yeah.
get into in its own episode. So that's not for today. But my question to you is, if you could go to one period of time, Westworld style, nothing bad will happen, right? Like, we're pretending that everything operates correctly. You're living in this period of time, you're immune to being hurt for, let's say, a month. What time period would you choose?
I don't think that I would go. I mean, I guess it's Westworld style, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, because you can't get hurt. This is Westworld, but Westworld's operating correctly.
When this question is always posed, I don't think I would go before like 1920. I mean, women couldn't even vote
That's true.
before 1920, so
It's
I'm.
definitely different if you're a man than if you're a woman.
Yeah, you'll be fine no matter what you
So
choose.
I actually, this is an answer that I haven't really heard people say to this kind of question before, but I've actually been thinking like, oh, I would do like back in time. I would do like 2020 or 2019. I mean, not 2020 because of the pandemic, but I would do like modern times because it would be like living normal life, only I can't get in trouble or hurt for doing things. So I could just do stupid stuff. There's no consequences.
I guess there's some kind of charm about the Wild West, specifically the
Yeah, like
Westworld, just like a lawlessness.
it'd be interesting to do the Wild West thing. I think that's almost what I'd probably venture towards. Just because, like, there's all like the debauchery and stuff. So there's still like fun things to do, like drinking and whatnot. I feel like if you go back to like colonial, like Massachusetts, you're screwed because everyone's a Puritan.
No, that wouldn't be fun. I mean, maybe like medieval times would be fun in Westworld
I think it
style.
kind of would be fun. Or like Greek or Roman.
Yeah. Somewhere pretty far back.
Let's just pretend that, like, we can suspend disbelief and they're not, like, insanely sexist.
All right.
Because that'd ruin your experience as a tourist if everyone was really sexist towards you and you couldn't do anything.
Maybe the robots would be...
more progressive, yes.
More progressive.
Honestly, the 1920s might be fun. Bootlegging, speakeasies.
Yeah.
You can be like a gangster, a bootlegger. That'd be so much fun. Be a
flapper girl.
Yeah, you could be like a bootlegger, only you can't die.
Yeah.
I think I'd go in the Prohibition times, actually. Something that'd be really fun.
Yeah, you could kind of sneak around.
You can shoot your way out of anything because they can't shoot you.
That's true.
It's a really good movie, actually. Also, just hot take, I think the perfect length for a movie is like an hour and a half, 20 minutes, an hour, 30 minutes. Anything over that is just stupid. Movies don't need to be long.
I don't really have a long attention span from movies, to be
honest.
This
movie is like an hour and 20, and it's good.
It's like, well, just the movie length. Velocipaster was like 80 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. That was perfect. Honestly, I just don't see a point in having a movie over an hour and a half.
You're not a Avatar 4 hour long.
No, Avatar kind sucks. Of guy. Avatar is literally just Pocahontas with blue people.
That's a hot take.
The plots are identical. It's just blue people and CGI.
Never really thought about.
The only thing that didn't happen in Pocahontas is Pocahontas didn't have sex with her freaking bird that she flies on. Because she didn't have a bird.
What is the parallel to Avatar?
That's the one thing that doesn't happen in that that's in Avatar. And remember like the hair thing? How he has sex with the like Navi or whatever with the hair? And then he binds with like the horse thing with his penis hair as well? Did you not think about that?
I watched this movie a really long time ago, so I don't remember anyone having sex with hair.
He had like sex with like the main girl by like they like stuck their hair together, and then he also like bonds with that bird thing and that horse thing by like putting his like penis hair with their penis hair. So like he's having sex with those things.
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, what happens?
I don't like that.
Yeah. No, it's just worse Pocahontas, in my opinion. All right, do you want to get into the episode or at least get into some announcements before the episode?
Yeah, let's do some announcements.
All right, this comes out on Thursday. You have an afternoon probably to sign up for our newsletter. It comes out Friday afternoon at 12. Go sign up. You don't want to miss out. We have all these awesome exclusive announcements and mm-hmm. you get to see everything that's going on in our show. We have a bunch of announcements that we could tell you now, but you got to sign up for the newsletter or you got to hear when they happen.
Don't be on the inside scoop.
Yes. So if you like our show, as I always say, please subscribe because that helps a lot. Just in terms of us, our numbers going up, which makes us look better and okay. tells the algorithm to show us. Also leave a review. We love that. And a good rating. We might eventually, you know what? Actually, I'm just going to say it now. Hopefully we don't regret having to do more work later, but if you start leaving nice comments on either Podchaser or Apple Podcast going forward, we will read them off at some point in the episode.
Yes.
They have to be either funny or nice.
Mean, no.
Yeah, mean ones, we're just going to pretend didn't happen. So like, so don't bother. Don't waste your time. Oh, and then next week, we're going to be joined by the Ladies Fright Podcast. So look out for that. That should be fun.
Yeah, they are some funny ladies.
So what are you talking about today?
Today, I am talking about Holy Land, USA.
I have no idea what that is. And I'm
It is a Christian theme park that has now been abandoned and it is haunted. I will throw a content warning out there because it is a little more true crimey than we usually go. So if there are mentions of murder and sexual assault. So if you're not into that, skip.
Skip. And I actually talked about a mystery for once, which is part of our namesake. So if you have seen, is it the Datalov Pass incident? There was actually an article that was written January 28th. So just like 3 or 4 days ago, just to give an overview, actually. So this story is perfect for us. I don't really want to spoil what they figured out, but this story is perfect because it involves people mysteriously disappearing. Mm-hmm. It involves Russians. It involves potential cover-ups, potential military operations, potentially Yetis, according to the Discovery Channel. According to the History Channel, it includes aliens. And somehow they've solved this mystery because of Disney's Frozen.
I almost did this topic, Steve, because it's been all over TikTok.
Oh, really? So I saw it trending on Twitter and I was like, oh, I should do this instead of what I was going to talk about.
This is like the third one in a row where we've been exactly on the same page in terms of topic.
I know. And
I'll tell how I got onto my topic later, but if I hadn't seen a cross in the middle of the road, I would have been talking about the same thing as you.
That's lucky, because we would have had to go to our contingency plan, which we will not tell you what it is until we eventually get there.
We do have backups just in case Steve and I talk about the same.
We have a whole topic that's all ready to go, and we've been putting it off, and it's just in case of emergency topic. And then also we're going to wrap things up with episode 12 of Kid Nation,
which was a lot of fun. It was cute. Yeah,
it was really cute. All right. So let's jump into your story.
All right. So this is the story of Holy Land USA Christian theme park. I'll tell you guys first how I got on this topic. Because as I was saying earlier, I was temporarily displaced between Vermont and New York City because of the snowstorm. And so I was driving to Connecticut and my friend's house, and I see, like, off in the distance, there's like this huge, this is in the middle of nowhere in Connecticut. This huge glowing LED cross. And I was like, what the fuck is that? So I go home and Google it, and turns out it is the remnants of this Christian themed theme park that was around in the 1980s and has been completely abandoned, and now it's haunted. So I kind of stumbled upon this story, and I think it's really cool.
Maybe we should investigate.
I actually went on TikTok, and there's these people who go to abandoned theme parks and hospitals and like creepy places, and someone went to Holy Land, and it's crazy because everything's still there.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just get into it.
Yeah.
So in the 1960s, there's this guy, John Baptist Greco, who is a Catholic attorney. He has a lot of money. In the 1960s, he decides that he wants to make this little oasis, kind of like a little mecca for Christians to go to, just in Waterbury, Connecticut. Random, but whatever. So it's called a theme park, but there's not like rides or games or anything. They did have like a snack bar and a gift shop, but it was more of like they had these religious scenes. So it would be like the Last Supper or any of those kind of like classic scenes.
So it's like a theme park in the way that like medieval times is a theme park, or like a medieval times fair is, where it's like there's not really rides, but there are other attractions that you go for.
Yeah. So there's little figurines of like Solomon's temple, or they had like catacombs. There's the Tower of Babel, just like classic scenes, but they set them up with little figurines and you could learn about it, but it was meant to be fun.
Yeah.
So this guy, John Baptist Greco, opens the park in the 1960s, and it kind of grows in popularity over the next 10 years, and they start getting a ton of visitors, over 50,000 visitors every summer. And in the middle of nowhere, again, so people are really coming out to it. So 1984, John Baptist Greco shuts the place down because he wants to expand. So he's like, let's shut it down for a year and we'll, you know, kind of expand the park, get some more attractions in here, and then it'll really take off.
Yeah.
within that year, he dies.
Ooh, that's not good.
The park is given to a group of nuns who, like, keep the park clean and everything and maintain it, but never really open it back up to the public.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all of these, like, no trespassing signs, whatever.
Yeah.
But a few years later, teenagers start figuring out that this old abandoned park is there and still kind of set up, but no one's really there. So there was this one summer where it just got completely vandalized.
Mm-hmm.
So they go in and trash the whole thing. So now there's, like, headless statues in the Last Supper and everything's spray painted. And after that, it just went into complete disarray.
Mm-hmm.
And no one ever really cleaned it up. So now, what is it? 60 years after it was created, if you go back, everything from the original is still there, but it's completely fallen apart. So just imagine, like, these nativity scenes that have been, like, decaying and, like, broken bottles everywhere. Like, it's just creepy.
That seems scarier than, like, a normal abandoned park.
Right? And so there's a lot of paranormal hunters that have gone into this place, and it's kind of wild. So
I do have a question, though. You said that there was a giant neon cross. Who's paying for the electricity?
That's a good question. So I will tell you. I think the nuns are still paying for it.
Oh, okay.
But I do have some facts about that cross.
Okay.
So throughout the years, there's been efforts to kind of clean up the park.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1997, the Boy Scouts pitched in to revamp the Holy Land USA sign. And then in 2008, they redid that big cross overlooking, I think it's on I-80, overlooking the town. And then in 2013, they put full-on LED lights in it. Like, it changes colors. Guess how tall this cross is, Steve?
80 feet.
Okay, no. 65 feet tall.
That's still really tall.
That's still really tall.
That's really, really tall.
Look up at your ceiling, everyone. That's 8 feet.
Yeah.
65. So, that's just the background.
Okay, so yeah, this is hard to miss.
Yes. So now I will get into sort of, like, the creepy stuff.
Okay.
About this place. So this is July 15th, 2010.
Mm-hmm.
This girl, Chloe, who is 16 years old, and her friend Francisco, who was 19 at the time, decide that they're going to go to Holy Land USA to kind of have, like, a little rebellious night.
A rebellious night at a Christian theme park.
Abandoned, though.
Oh, I assumed you meant, like, a rebellious night in an operational Christian theme park. I'm like, wow.
No. This is in 2010. So this is, I mean, it shut down in the 80s.
Oh, yeah. So
it's completely, like, creeped out.
Spooky.
Spooky. So Chloe and Francisco go to Holy Land at night, and they bring 4 hooses with them, which I guess is in a caffeinated alcoholic drink.
H-O-O-S-E?
No, it's J-O-O-S-E.
Oh, I gotta see this. Juice. Is a malt beverage. 12% alcohol by volume, or 14 in 24 ounce cans. That's pretty, it's like 2 beers. So, how do you drink this crap? Lemonade,
and it's caffeinated.
Yeah, that's
and it sounds like a 4 Loko, but worse.
Yeah,
and apparently they make you a little bonkers.
I mean, 4 Loko does too.
I know. But just wait. So they're walking to Hilltop Park, which is just, like, a little grassy area within Holy Land. And
They went
I
there at
guess
night, didn't they? That's weird.
what?
They went there at night? That's so weird.
I mean, I don't know. But I guess this is like a classic teenager hangout spot where a lot of kids go and like hook up and smoke weed and whatever. So
Drink juice.
drink juice. So they go to Hilltop Park, and on their way there, this is all recounted from Francisco.
Yeah.
Is that on the way there, they're passing, quote, frame replicas of Bethlehem and Jerusalem, and there's signs that say Bethlehem is our hope, and then there's a sign that says Jesus is condemned to death. So it's just like really creepy stuff.
Yeah, very Christian stuff, too.
Yeah. So they get to Hilltop Park, and basically Francisco tries to make a sexual advance on Chloe,
Ooh.
and she says no, like we're just friends. Long story short, he ends up raping her.
Oh, wait. I thought these were two girls.
No,
Oh.
Francisco.
Oh, I thought you said Francisca at first. I thought
No,
it was like a Francesca.
Francisco.
Oh, Jesus.
So this is where the story turns really dark. So he ends up raping her and puts his hands around her neck, chokes her, and then after she's like very clearly dead at this point, and then stabs her four times in the neck.
Oh my God.
According to people who knew them, this was not typical behavior. And I don't know if it was the Jews or if it was some kind of weird energy in the park, but that's kind of why people think that Holy Land has something weird
That's freaky.
going on in him.
So this is interesting that something I learned. I didn't really end up talking about it because there's too many theories about the Detlev Pass incident that's relevant to this actually is. So you know what ultrasound is, obviously, right? There's this thing called intrasound, I believe it's called. It's a sound pitch that is too low for our ears to process, but is known to drive people a little crazy. So one of the theories that I don't really go into is that because of the positioning of where they are camped, there are these winds that make this infrasound noise. And they hypothesized that it probably fried their brains, and that's why they ran out and like froze to death. So there actually has been a lot of research that suggests that for whatever reason, either naturally or man-made, a lot of places that we presume to be haunted actually have this infrasound, right? And that sort of makes people go crazy and see things or do things that are irrational. So going to the dark
That's
energy
so
thing,
crazy.
if this is an abandoned theme park, it's not impossible that there's some sort of infrasound that's like messing with people. And maybe the juice and all that stuff, being a sexually repressed teenager, led that guy to rape and murder his friend.
Yeah. That's weird about the sounds, though. That
Yeah.
kind of freaks me out.
I would love to actually have someone who's a paranormal investigator on and ask them that question in particular. Not to like discredit them, just out of curiosity if they account for that.
Yeah. Oh, now I'm getting spooked. I'm like looking behind me. I'm not in my usual recording spot. I'm
Don't
down.
worry, you're not able to hear these noises that make you crazy. Yeah, they're not common though, but there is a link between them and haunted locations, which is pretty fascinating to me.
That's really fascinating. I
Yeah.
want to talk more about that.
We should do a deep dive on that.
We should. So, just a little bit more haunted history. Aside from this murder, there have also been a lot of accounts of ghosts, ghost encounters. And in
Which supports
particular,
my theory.
that's true. That's very true. So apparently there's this woman who is often seen by the gates of the theme park.
Yeah.
Of course the gates are locked, but she's on the other side of the gate inside the theme park. But then when you approach her, she vanishes. She has also been seen in a quote phantom car that disappears. And it's also been said that electrical equipment drains very rapidly in the park. And because of that, there's, I guess, more fog or like steam. And when there's this steam, a lot of people see shadowy, headless figures going through.
That's freaky. Were there people murdered there that would explain those headless figures?
When I was doing my research, I only saw this one murder from 2010, but there might have been earlier ones that were not.
They could have also been from before this was a theme park.
Yeah, that's true. And when you type in Holy Land USA murder, all that comes up is this one that happened in 2010, but I don't know if there was ones before that are just kind of getting buried or.
Yeah, that's interesting though.
Yeah. And just to kind of finish this story out.
Yeah.
So there are other similar places in the U.S. that are also haunted, which kind of adds to the allure of mm-hmm. Holy Land. So there's a, quote, creation museum in Kentucky that has animatronic puppet.
What the? Why?
Sounds horrifying.
Why right? would you do that?
And the whole park is predicated on the belief that Earth is only 6,000 years old. And then there's also the Holy Land Experience in Orlando, where you can watch a gory recreation of the crucifixion and then go play mini golf.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Fun. And then you can also go to the Bible Walk in Ohio, which has
all these are haunted.
Yes.
I
it
see
has 78 scenes of like different wax figures, and they've all been, maybe not all of them, but some of them have been repurposed from Madame Tussauds or other wax museums. So there's one of like John Travolta, and Tom Cruise are both Jesus.
That's funny.
In different scenes.
That's really funny because they're both part of that religion that we will not discuss because they have more power over famous people and they will ruin our lives. So that
John Travolta too?
He's like one of the top guys, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy that they're both Jesus in this park. That's
yeah, crazy. I know. That religion that must not be named for purposes of us not getting sued or converted.
Jesus shall not be named.
Yeah. Oh, and just to preface this all, like, if you're getting mad because we've said anything about, like, Christianity, Emmy and I are both Christians, so like it's not like we're shitting on this from a different perspective. I'm not going to go into my beliefs per se, but just know that I am a Christian. I'm not like a cynical person looking at it from a different religion.
No, I just thought it was interesting in that it's a haunted theme park.
No, that's not what I mean. I just know that people get sensitive about religious stuff, so I just want to put that out there now that like we are both Christian people. We're not like attacking your religion by saying stuff's haunted.
Yeah. So that's Holy Land.
That is wild.
I just thought it was funny that I like stumbled upon this giant cross and I was like, huh, what's that? And
that's
then
the best way to do it though. Like,
yeah.
I wish I had more inspiration by seeing things, but I don't really leave my house much. So
I know. Well, it's hard these days.
Yeah, I know. Hard to find things to be inspired by. Yeah. All right. Let's get into my story.
Yes.
Hello, friends. This is Michael J. Mayone, the host of Micro Break, the podcast for humans with the attention span of a goldfish. Join me each week as I share my thoughts, wisdom, and humor on a wide range of topics, all delivered unscripted and loosely edited. You never know what you're going to hear, but you can be sure it'll be honest. Streaming right now on your favorite podcast player.
So, I covered Dyatlov Pass incident. For now on, I'm just going to refer to it as the incident because Russian words are hard to say. So, I'm going to break this up into pretty much three sections of this, how I see it. The first is there's the incident itself, which I'm going to describe, everything that happened. Then I'm going to go through some of the theories. And then finally, I'm going to go through the most recent one, which doesn't prove what happened, but provides the most compelling evidence for what possibly could have reasonably happened.
All right.
So on January 23rd, 1959, 10 members of the Erlas Polytechnic Institute of Yekaterinburg, 9 students and 1 sports instructor. The sports instructor fought in World War II, which is a little bit important, but a kind of a useless piece of information I just gave you.
Okay.
And the group headed out on a 200-mile skiing and mountaineering adventure through Russia's frigid Ural Mountains. So these people are all expert mountaineers and climbers and stuff, right? This is not like if you or I went out there where we might have the physical capability to like hike in the snow or cross-country ski, but we would probably die because we're not like experts like this.
Yeah.
These are hardened Soviet people. So the oldest guy is 30 years old. He's the World War II vet. The others are in their 20s. So these are young people. So one of the students was suffering joint pain and he decided to head home. And the rest of the students were led by 23-year-old engineering student Igor Datlov, who the incident is named after because he's the leader, continuing on their adventure. And that one.
So how old are the students?
This kid's 23, who's leading the trip.
So are they like kids?
They're in college.
Okay.
They're all in college or they're college alums. So this kid is like our age.
All right.
Except for the one lucky guy who's like, I have joint pain, I'm going to turn around, and didn't suffer a horrendous death.
Mm-hmm.
9 students, it was 7 men and 2 women, went out and were never seen alive again. So according to camera film and personal diaries that were found by the search and rescue team, the students made camp on February 1st, and they pitched a large tent in a snowy slope of Kolat Sinkla, which is known by the indigenous as Dead Mountain, which is funny because, like, that's such a terrible translation. It certainly was supposed to say Death Mountain, not Dead Mountain.
Dead.
That was the translation that that the article gave me, which I think is really funny. After a few weeks, the families of these people got concerned. I think the guy who left also was concerned that they hadn't come back. So an expedition was sent out to search for them, and they found the top of their tent sticking out of the snow.
Mm-hmm.
And the first body wasn't found until the next day. So just to give an overview, the bodies of these students were found, they were about 6 miles away from their final destination. And they're scattered almost a mile away from the campsite without their skis, without shoes or coats. And they were in approximately negative 30 degree Fahrenheit weather, which is,
oh my God,
really cold. So we're going to go into what the actual facts are soon, but I just want to give an overview of the incident. So over the next few months, as the snow thawed, the team uncovered all 9 members' bodies in the scattering of the mountains. Some of them were undressed. Some of them had fractured skulls, fractured chest. One was missing eyes, and another was missing a tongue. And then the reason that things got kind of suspicious were once the last body was found, the Soviet government abruptly closed the case less than a month later and concluded that the cause of death was, quote, a compelling natural force.
How do you lose a tongue?
How do you lose an eye? Lose your eyes and your tongue. So you understand why this has been a big mystery for 67 years.
67 years.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Now we're going to go through the facts of what we actually know about this case, right? Before we get into explanations. So this is what we know indisputably. 6 of the skiers died of hypothermia and 3 died of their injuries. The skiers died separately. 2 were found under a cedar tree near the remains of a fire, and the other 3 were found in intervals of hundreds of feet apart away from the tree. And the last 4 were found 250 feet away in a ravine. The 2 who were under the tree had burnt hands, and the 4 in the ravine were not found for 4 months after the first body was discovered. It appeared as if the dead people donated their clothing because the people who died later were wearing the clothing of the dead. And in some cases, the clothing was cut off their bodies. And others, it was removed. There were only 8 or 9 sets of footprints in the snow, which was consistent with the number of skiers. So this suggested that there wasn't a third party that attacked them, and there was no evidence of a struggle. It was all voluntary.
Okay.
There was no found animal tracks or other people tracks coming towards the campsite.
Yeah.
So this is actually an interesting thing, because this is not true, actually. Something in one of their diaries is factually incorrect, because they were talking about a bad snowstorm on February 2nd, but according to geodata, there wasn't a snowstorm on February 2nd.
Weird.
So their diary, they wrote about that. And despite the miserable conditions and slow pace, apparently the mountaineers were very cheerful. This is before they died, unfortunately for them. So after the 5 bodies were found, a legal team pretty much came in to determine the cause of death. And they determined that it was hypothermia, and that the reason that they were in various states of death, being undressed, because of a phenomenon known as paradoxical undressing, which occurs in about 25% of hypothermia patients. And that's basically when your hypothalamus malfunctions, your body temperature feels like it's rising, even though you're getting cold. So you undress, which makes things even worse.
Maybe that's like a self-defense mechanism. So you just like go quicker.
No, I don't know. I think like your brain's just fried because your hypothalamus fails.
Yeah.
So that stuff's all straightforward. This is where things get weird.
Okay.
So the skier's badly damaged tent was cut open from the inside, and all of their gear and supplies were left inside the tent.
Mm-hmm.
And this raised a lot of questions. For example, why were they dead of exposure if they had access to all their winter gear before going outside in the freezing winds?
Right.
And they also appeared to have left in a hurry. For example, one of the guys, Zala Tarav, fled the camp with just his camera and no other gear.
Strange.
And then there's another person, Soldbin, along with 3 others, died in a pose that suggested that they were trying to return to the tent. And the Soldin was also found with a small crack in his skull. But the investigators said that it was hypothermia that killed him.
I mean, you don't just casually have a crack in your skull.
Yeah, exactly. It's weird. And then things get even weirder with the 4 bodies that were in the ravine. So 2 had fractured ribs, 1 had a major skull fracture, and they determined that the amount of force that they needed to have taken to sustain these injuries, no man could have done. It was the equivalent of a car running you over.
Wow. So it wasn't like someone had to come there to kill them or...
Yeah. Oh, and also there was no soft tissue damage, which implied that they were killed by pressure. Like the pressure shattered, gave them their injuries.
Ooh.
Sabina was found missing a tongue and had no eyes. The question was, did another skier cut them off? Was there another party? And the thing that is crazy is there's absolutely no indication of other people nearby.
Could it have been an animal?
I mean, that's possible. It's, they didn't find animal tracks, though.
Yeah.
Some articles kind of mislead here by saying they all had radiation on their clothing. Only 2 of them were found with radioactive clothing.
Radioactive?
Yeah.
What?
And the Soviet Union closed the case in 1959 because there was no guilty party. And this case archived and classified. And it finally became public in the 1990s. But parts of the file were just missing.
Weird.
This very well could have been just an avalanche, right? A minor avalanche. But a lot of how this was conducted screams Soviet cover-up. Because why would you cover up an avalanche? That's not embarrassing.
It doesn't make any sense.
Makes no sense. So now we're going to jump into the theories. So These are kind of fun. A lot of these are kind of really weak, but are really fun.
Yeah.
So
there are
4 different theories that implicate foul play. So the first suggests that 2 of the hikers were double agents transporting radioactive samples in searching for CIA agents who were reportedly in the area. However, something went wrong and the agents attacked. The problem with this theory is that, first of all, if they're transporting radioactive samples, it's not possible for only their clothing to be radioactive. And secondly, the two people that were proposed to have been the double agents, only one of them had radioactive clothing.
And then where does the radioactive stuff go?
Exactly. Where's the radioactive stuff go? And the other thing, too, is how would the CIA have killed them if there were no bullet wounds or anything?
Yeah. And we said that it couldn't have been force created by a person.
No, it couldn't have been. Unless they ran them over in a truck or like a snowmobile, which I don't think existed yet.
Yeah.
I don't think that that's possible. So that's a weak theory. The second theory, I think, has some legs to it. As far as these foul play ones go. So the second one suggests that the 9 skiers were mistaken for fugitives from gulags, or they witnessed something they weren't supposed to see.
Mm-hmm.
So not that far from there, they were doing some military tests, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But the only real evidence for this theory is that there were gulags in Yuri Yundi, which is the area. And the survivor who turned around early claims that there's a piece of clothing that didn't belong to anyone in the group. And the type of clothing was widely used among soldiers in the 40s and later among gulag prisoners.
Whoa.
And even more interesting, this piece of evidence vanished from the evidence locker.
So how do we know it was there?
There's records of it, but we don't have a record of, there's no like evidence of it.
Spooky.
Yeah. But the one flaw of this theory is that Zola Trive, who is the sportsman who joined them, was a World War II vet. And because he joined the team late, the chances that this guy who didn't stick around the whole time knew every article of clothing this guy he didn't know well owned is really slim. So, yeah. And he was a soldier at the time. So odds are he was probably wearing that as like an undergarment of some sort, because he was a soldier, so he wore that at the time. But the gulag thing is kind of interesting.
That is interesting.
So actually, I lied when I said there's four. There's only three theories about foul play. the third one, I think, is the least credible, and for a lot of reasons. It's pretty racist. And that blames the indigenous Manse. They claim that they attacked them, because they're also a really easy scapegoat to be like, oh, the indigenous people attacked you, right? Mm-hmm. So the reason that this is kind of bullshit is the theory suggests that they're camping on sacred land, but a little bit of research I did, apparently this mountain range is not sacred to them at all. It doesn't really hold much significance. So there's no reason for them to attack people out of anger. They also didn't steal any of their valuable possessions, which is like, if you're going to kill people, you're probably raiding them for some reason, right?
Yeah.
And finally, there just weren't any of them camped there at any given time. Like at that time, there just weren't these indigenous people camped nearby.
Mm-hmm.
Some people claim that they found like the remnants of their tents and like, oh, must have been them. It's like, but they're an easy scapegoat and they probably didn't do it.
Yeah. And I mean, that could be from any time.
Yeah, exactly. Like that could be from whatever. So then we get the Discovery Channel's take on this, which is completely unsubstantiated and bonkers. And I love it. So the Discovery Channel made a 2-hour long documentary in 2014 claiming that Yetis killed them. It's not based on anything that was proposed at any given time. The History Channel just fabricated this in 2014. I started watching it. I couldn't finish it because it was too long. But I had the giggles because I was laughing at it. They're taking it so seriously. They're like, oh my God, we're in the Yetis cave. It's like, they didn't camp in a cave. What are you guys talking about? They camped to the bottom of a mountain.
They have so many funny series like that. Like when I was covering Thunderbird, they had an entire show about people who go missing in Alaska. And every one of them, it's like, I bet it was a Bigfoot. Or like, they just use cryptids to explain why people go missing in Alaska. And it's like, people try to go missing in Alaska.
I know. Have you ever watched Monster Quest?
I don't think so.
So the first season, like, cause I watched that when I was a kid, right? The first season's like kind of legit. And then the next 3 seasons are just them searching for Bigfoot pretty much, or the Chupacabra.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like the whole time is not informative. The whole time they're just hunting for something that doesn't exist. And it's like, this is incredible.
I always used to watch Finding Bigfoot.
Finding Bigfoot?
Yeah.
I never watched that one.
Thing, I'm sure.
So basically, the only reason that theory has some sort of legs to it is that there are legends of Yetis living in that area, right? So they're like, okay, there's that. And then conveniently enough, they happen to interview an indigenous woman who just so conveniently had a story about a 6 to 9 foot tall ape man who kills people and steals their tongues and eyes. Like, come on. Come on. And then the guy was like, when I heard that the eyes and tongue were gone, I knew it had to be a Yeti. It's like, who knew it had to be a Yeti? Okay, buddy.
And then, like, why didn't it take all of their tongues and eyes?
Yeah, exactly. It just took one of their tongues and eyes, and it's like, had to have been a Yeti. Oh, and then just another little aside, actually, I did find out the Russians' explanation, which I think that's pretty solid. For someone who doesn't trust Russia, that's a high compliment for me. But the Russian official said that the woman whose eyes and tongue were missing was found face down with her face in a stream. So they're saying that something either got her or like the running water like sped up the decay process.
Okay.
It's disgusting, but yeah. So that's all there is on Yetis. I tried to find more information about Yetis, but it seems like the only people that think Yetis cause this are these two people on the Discovery Channel.
All right. Well, that checks out.
Yeah. So there's also UFOs. And can you guess who was pitching the UFO angle?
Is it the Ancient Aliens guy?
That's exactly who it is.
Yes. I love that guy with the crazy hair.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm actually going to get into the military operation thing, because they cited all the reasons that it was probably actually a military operation cover up. But instead of using the logic of using Occam's razor, going with the most obvious reasonable answer, they're like, oh, it was aliens. It wasn't that there was this nuke. There's like radiation tests, like weapon tests. I'm pro aliens, right? But when you cite the same evidence that they use to explain that's probably secret military operations.
Yeah.
I think that the one that's actually real definitively should trump the one that's not real. So we're going to jump into the military operations theory. So the theory there is the same night that these hikers died, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was another group of hikers about 30 miles south reported seeing glowing orbs in the sky, which were confirmed by meteorological data. Some people claim those are aliens, but what's more likely is the Russians were testing these rockets and doing rockets and weapons tests in this part mm-hmm. of like Siberia at the time.
Yeah. So
far more likely that these lights in the sky were rockets. The popular theory is that the skiers stumbled upon a military test site where the Soviets were experimenting with radioactive weapons. And this radiological weapons testing could account for the hikers' weird injuries. Theory, if they got too close to explosion, that would definitely generate enough force to fracture a chest or a skull. The other theory is that they had radiation burns. They thought that they were hot, and that's why they took their clothes off. The other reason they think that is, according to some people, the tent, the way they found it, was not set up in a way that someone who's an expert would ever set up a tent in like mountain hiking like this, which makes them believe that it could have been a cover up. Like maybe these people stumbled on there like, oh fuck, let's cover this up. And some of the artifacts that they owned were removed and never seen again from the site, like removed from the tent.
Why would they set up a tent?
The idea is that the Soviet government was like, oh shit, we don't need this bad press getting out that we killed these people by accident. Let's set up their tent.
If they weren't camping there, what were they doing?
So they were camping there, right? Or they're supposed to be camping there. So I think the idea is that these people died. Maybe they were killed before they set up their tent. The Soviets were like, uh-oh, we got to make this look like something crazy happened.
Yeah.
See, that theory has a lot of legs just because it's Soviet Russia, so they cover things up.
Yeah.
But this is the most likely explanation, which I read about in National Geographic. These two guys recently published I don't know when the paper came out, but the Nat Geo thing came out a few days ago. So an interesting thing about how this is like going viral on TikTok is the guy figured this out or figured out the process back in 2013. So I don't know what's up. This should kind of be old news to some extent. But according to National Geographic, In the wake of renewed media interest, and all these outlandish theories like Bigfoot and Yetis and UFOs killing people, the Russian authorities are like, fuck this. We don't need this noise. They have re-examined the case, and they've determined that an avalanche and hypothermia was primarily responsible for the 9 deaths. However, the Russian government failed to present any explanation for how an avalanche could have taken place with no evidence of an avalanche.
Yeah. Just like a little mini avalanche.
Yeah.
But which like no one's covered in snow.
Yeah, which this is where it gets interesting. We'll get to that in a sec. So the avalanche proposal still doesn't really stack up great for 4 reasons. So this was proposed originally in 1959. And the 4 reasons that there was an issue with this is that the encampment was cut into snow on a slope with an incline, which was 2 miles to permit an avalanche. So generally speaking, 30 degrees slope is what you need for an avalanche to occur. So there's also no snowfall on the night of February 1st that could have increased the weight of the snow burden on the slope enough to trigger a collapse. And third, most of the blunt force trauma, like injuries, and there's some soft tissue damage, was atypical of avalanche asphyxiate victims. So that doesn't really add up. And finally, if there was an avalanche, why was there a gap of at least 9 hours between the team members cutting the slope before their encampment and the avalanche? Alexander Puzrin and Johann Gumi, both Swiss, set out to answer this question. Puzrin is a geotechnical engineer at ETH Zurich, which is one of Switzerland's federal institutes of technology. And he recently published a paper, I don't really know how recently that was, about how strange it may seem that an earthquake can trigger an avalanche with a big gap in the avalanche ranging from minutes to several hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then he eventually teamed up with Johann, who is the head of the Snow Avalanche Simulation Laboratory, also in Switzerland. And the two of them worked together to create an analytical model and computer simulator to try and replicate the avalanche.
Okay.
And one of the first findings they had was that the slope was actually not as shallow as everyone says it was. Based on the topography and the snowfall, it made an illusion that it looked like it wasn't a very steep slope, but it was actually at least 30 degrees.
Okay.
So
that's promising.
First off, these people actually screwed up and pitched a tent in a terrible spot. And then the researchers' computer simulation show that an avalanche was likely small and would likely have involved a block of icy matter about the size of an SUV. So that's about 16 feet, which would explain why there's no evidence of an avalanche. So that's not very big.
So the avalanche was only 16 feet wide?
Wide, yes.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's not big at all.
Yeah. So this is why they won't be able to find it. The question that the two of them set out to figure out was, how could such a small collapse have caused such traumatic injuries?
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, Disney's Frozen answered that question. So in 2013, Goyman was so impressed with how well the movement of snow was depicted in Frozen that he decided to ask his animators how they pulled it off. And following his trip to Hollywood, where he met specialists who worked on Frozen's snow effects, Gauman modified the film's snow animation code for his avalanche simulation models to simulate the impacts that avalanches would have on the human body.
Wow.
And with this and data that GM had when testing seatbelts way back when with cadavers to see how effective they were, some of them had stiff things, I guess, like a stiff back, like something to like support them. And what they found is that the impacts with a stiff, like, back type thing are significantly worse than if, like, it was just a normal body in a chair. Okay. And what they've realized is, doing research, they found that the skiers placed their bedding on top of their skis, which meant that when the avalanche hit them while they slept, the avalanche struck an unusually rigid target, which would have given them the pressure to crack bones.
And so that was their skis.
Yeah. So if they weren't sleeping on top of their skis, they would have survived. And that's
crazy.
And to go more in depth, the computer models demonstrated that a 16-foot-long block of snow could, in this unique circumstance, handily break ribs and skulls of people immediately sleeping on a rigid bed. These injuries would have been severe but not fatal immediately. So no one knows for sure what actually happened after the avalanche, but the latest theory is that the skiers cut themselves out of the smothered tent, which explains why they cut it out and they were in such a rush because they were covered in snow.
Mm-hmm.
And then they fled in panic towards temporary shelter in the tree line a mile or two downslope. Three of them were found severely injured. So it's likely that the more able-bodied survivors dragged the injured out of the smothered shelter in an attempt to rescue them.
So, but I feel like that still leaves a few things unexplained.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this doesn't answer everything. There is still a mystery here, but it provides the most logical explanation based on science that could explain the avalanche theory and like all the fractured bones and stuff. But yeah, there's a lot to dissect still.
There's a lot. Wow. What a crazy story. And I can't believe they don't have a better explanation.
I know. I mean, it's Soviet Russia.
The radioactive stuff.
That's the thing is like, this doesn't address that at all, the radioactive stuff. So I couldn't find the validity of this. So I didn't really mention it, but there is a photo in black and white, obviously, because it's the 50s. The guy that had the photograph, he took a photo of what's probably just one of his companions with a blacked out face, but kind of looks like it could be a Yeti.
Dun, dun, dun.
Exactly. That's the big mystery of it all, but probably not a Yeti.
But it would be crazy if it was.
Yeah. Oh, also, I forgot to mention this. So the whole unsubstantiated Discovery Channel thing was based off of one person's YouTube video. Like, no joke. Some people made a YouTube video, and then that spawned a whole Discovery special. Discovery Channel 2-hour special.
Wow. Yeah. They're really picking at straws these days.
Yep. That's why they should hire us.
They should. They should. We would be fun.
It would be fun. We could be the next face of Discovery Channel. We could be the next Mike Rowe.
What a great show.
I love that show. He's a podcaster, too. We got to become big enough to interview him.
I'm in.
Let's do it. All right. Do you want to talk some Kid Nation?
Let's do it.
So, Kid Nation episode 12.
So, this is the second to last episode ever.
There are 4 days left, which is bonkers. That means that they've crammed 2 episodes in 4 days.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you want to start us off?
All right. As you guys know, last week they kind of named Sophia the town sheriff.
Yes.
Which you know is never going to be a great idea to put one person with that much power.
I know. Good thing it wasn't Laurel, though. The way she got so power hungry when she got elected out.
Yeah, and she was someone who was, like, good throughout most of the show. And then once it got to her head, she went crazy.
Yeah, I know.
So now, Sophia's the town sheriff, and she's done this a few times throughout the show where she just conducts, like, weird, like, social experiments.
Yeah.
So the show opens with her, quote, claiming a plot of land, and she just like puts ropes in a square and then asks people to pay to go into her square.
5 cents.
5 cents. And then she's like, of course, like, this is just like a random spot in town, but now everyone's trying to walk through it because they can't.
Yeah, she's probably a psychologist.
I think she's smart, but she's just like,
no, I mean,
I didn't even think of that stuff.
I just think that she likes manipulating people. So she's probably in that. Who knows though?
I can't remember what else she did that with, but she kind of does weird stuff like that.
Didn't she like lie down and pretend to be dead?
Yeah, was that her?
Yeah, it had to have been her. No one else would have done that.
She lied down in the middle of town and then everyone else just started lying down around her.
Yeah, so that was how that started. And then they read the book, and the book tells them to take a hike.
Yes. And but just the town council.
Just the town council takes a hike, which you know that they wrote that. Because like, okay, Sophia is going to fuck shit up And there's going to be so much drama. And honestly, they set it up as if there was going to be a lot of drama. And it was kind of disappointing.
It kind of like worked out, actually.
She kind of ran the town better than the council has the entire time.
Yeah. So what she did was, so the town council leaves, and we'll talk about where they went after, but.
Yeah. I just want to jump to the fact that she did an amazing job.
Yeah. Her whole thing was like, she told everyone, like, let's just like get shit done right now. You do the dishes, you like whatever job you have to get done, get it done right now. And then we'll open up the arcade and we'll have fun. And it worked.
It worked really well because it wasn't just like, get your work done. She'd be like, I want to have the arcade open in 30 minutes. Yeah. And everyone scrubbed their dishes really fast and was good. So I liked that. I think that she actually ran things really well. Back to where the council is. They took a hike past the mines and they went to go like live with these Pueblo Native Americans.
And when they go see the Native Americans, a lot of the guys on the town council don't really know what to do with themselves. But Michael did such a great job. He went up to the chief and he was like, we're so eager to learn about your culture, and was asking him all these great questions about like how he should be leading the town. And it was really sweet.
That is nice. What I was wondering is, do those guys actually live there full time or they're just paid to hang out there?
They definitely, I don't know.
I just feel like if you choose somewhere in the desert or you're isolated, you're probably not too keen on having like a bunch of screaming children not that far away in your backyard.
Maybe they don't like actively live there, but I bet it's like their land.
Oh, I mean, yeah, it's probably their land for sure.
And when they got there, it was sad too, because it was like raining and they were like standing outside and like looked miserable.
Yeah. So back to the town, Taylor said something nice that was also really mean at the same time, which I loved. She was on to Sophia and she commented Sophia said she was doing a better job than town council like ever did, pretty much. She said something like, Greg never notices me or whatever. I ran right down her quote, but she basically said, I don't want him to come back. I hope he gets eaten by a coyote in the mountains.
See, I feel like she's saying that because she has a crush on Greg.
Oh, she 100% does.
Yeah. So she's just playing mean to him because she liked him. Even though she's 9 and he's 15, but like he definitely has a crush on him.
Good, because that'd be problematic. Hope nothing happened there.
We have no reason to believe that it did.
No, we have no reason to believe that it did. So another thing I was thinking is Alex and Jared, right, were like palling around looking at the cow skeleton. And I was just thinking, like, they're in New Mexico. They get stung by a scorpion, bitten by a rattlesnake, bitten by a black widow, all things that live there that could kill them. They shouldn't be allowed to wander.
That's a good point, because who knows what's hiding in these cow bones?
Yeah, seriously. I mean, I just don't get it. Unless they placed them there on purpose recently.
I feel like they might have placed them there.
Yeah. I had no idea Jared and Alex were pals, but it was really cute.
Well, it makes sense, because they're both smart and they're into, like, being intellectual.
Yeah. I love how Alex said that he wants to be, when he grows up, he wants to either be a chemist or a geography teacher.
So cute.
He is my favorite character. He doesn't do much, but he's just adorable.
He's so cute, and he's smart, and he's just like a little nugget.
I'm a big fan of Alex. I've been since day one.
Yeah, he's really cute.
Yeah. And then I love how DK is like, we got to pick a smart kid this time. We could be funding the next great thinker.
That's what Greg said too. He was like, if we pick like one of the smart kids, we could be funding a cure for cancer. And I was like, how much money do you think this is? Like,
it's $20,000.
I feel like they don't really have $1,000. Yeah.
I think the next thing that really happened was the showdown, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the showdown is they have a house, chickens, and an alpaca, I think it was, and a flag. They had to deconstruct the house, carry it across the desert, and reconstruct it. Each team has to do this, and they have 1 hour to do it.
And it's a very, like, purely physical challenge, which is so unfair, because it's like, the yellow team, they not only have bad attitudes, but it's just, like, a lot of younger kids
Also, how can they
keep up with the blue?
Not the four strongest, but four of the strongest people are gone.
Yeah, because the town council is gone. So, like, yellow, their only chance was having Blaine on the team, and he's gone.
Yeah, he's gone. Also, her name is pronounced fucking Migle.
What did you think it was?
I thought, like, Miguel or something. Migle. Migle.
Migle.
That is the funniest name. Migle. I laughed every time they said Migle.
It is really random.
No, that name makes no sense.
She said she was from somewhere. I can't remember.
Migle.
Migle.
She's an alien. Migle from Migle. Migle.
Right.
John's parents are elephant trainers.
He kind of dropped like a few episodes before that he lived in a zoo.
Yeah.
And I remember us both being like, what the fuck? But now I'm even more confused.
What a niche job.
His parents are both elephant trainers and he just bops around between zoos. And that's probably why he's homeschooled.
Yeah. That's nuts. I mean, elephants live a long time. You'd think you want like the same handlers with them. They form like complex bonds.
Well, I mean they might stick with the same elephants, who knows.
I don't think elephants are moving zoos.
I don't know. We gotta ask Guylin. I don't know.
Yeah, we need a zoologist. Actually, we gotta go to the Bronx Zoo sometime, and then hopefully when it's warmer out we can go, and maybe when COVID's over, or at least we're vaccinated, we'll be big enough to convince someone there to do an interview with us, and we can meet the penguins. I just want to meet the penguins.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be video content. I want to meet the penguins. I want to meet the penguin handler. I want to meet the penguins. Or if I can't meet the penguins, I want to meet an animal.
I would show my face on the internet for that.
Yes, I would too. I would too. I would have the best. We also have, just before we get back on track, in the outdoor area, you know, like the little penguins are just called little penguins. They have little penguins outdoors. This is like a big bubble, because I know you're in the Bronx. They have like a big bubble, right?
Yeah.
And you can go in there, and they have like this huge, like open, it's not really open, but it's like open space enclosure with water. And they come like zipping by in the water and check you out. I love them. They're like this big.
Penguins are so cute.
I love penguins. They're one of my favorite animals.
The last time I went to the zoo, I swear to God, I could have stayed in the penguin enclosure all day. Like,
yeah, it's a little chilly though. That's the one issue. And it smells kind of like, at least at the Central Park Zoo, it smells kind of bad.
Yeah, but you get used to it.
You do. Back to the Kid Nation. So green is upper class, red are merchants, blue are the cooks, yellow are the servants, and holy shit, yellow won with like maybe a second to spare.
Yeah. It was a close one.
The rewards were a monument or a fucking hot air balloon ride.
And remember that Sophia is in charge while the town council is gone, so she alone gets to pick the reward.
Yeah. And in retrospect, it didn't really matter because this show didn't get continued, so I can't imagine very many people would be traveling to the Kid Nation monument.
Yeah. The thing was stupid. It was just a slab of concrete that had some writing on it that was like, in 2009, a bunch of kids lived here.
Yeah.
Or you could get a fucking hot air balloon ride. Like,
I would not go in one of those flying death baskets, but I also wouldn't want the plaque.
You wouldn't go on a hot air balloon ride?
No way.
Dude, what?
That's how white people die. Hot air balloon rides.
I actually have a funny hot air balloon story.
Oh, tell it.
So in college during senior week, do you remember they had hot air balloons?
I don't fuck with that. I don't fuck with hot air balloons.
Well, so all week they kept pushing it off because it has to be a very specific wind pattern, I guess. Yeah. And so they sent out an email that was like, okay, we're going to do hot air balloon rides at 7:30 a.m. on Friday. And it's during senior week. So, of course, everyone's just like partying.
I had a job interview for a job I didn't get that Friday morning.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah.
That sucked.
I woke up at like 5 a.m. and the only thing that was open was Subway. So I ventured down to Subway.
Oh my God.
I had to walk because I was still like a little drunk. So I had to walk down to Subway at like 5 a.m. I also bought I bought like two Gatorades, a Dollar General. I chugged them both, ate my Subway, showered for like an hour, and then did an interview. And I was like, yeah, I have a cold, but I was really just hungover and felt like shit. And then the rest of the day, I was just like, my body was ruined the rest of the day. And then like, I finally felt like okay. And the next morning, my parents arrived for graduation and they brought like beer and they wanted to like drink and celebrate. And like, oh my God, fuck my life. Not to like admit that I had like died. So yeah. I drank with them and it was just vicious cycle. And then I didn't drink for like a month after that, or probably like a week or two more realistically, because my graduation parties and such.
Anyways, my hot air balloon. It was at 7:30 on a Friday morning after a bender of a week. And I was like, I've wanted to do this my whole life. I have to get up. I have to go. So I get up, drag my friend with me, and we get there at 7:30 a.m. And when I tell you, Steve, we went 15 feet off the ground. We went 15 feet off the ground. We didn't even go above the dorms.
Oh, seriously?
You were tied to a rope. And you just, all we did was go up and go down.
Well, it'd be such a liability to let you guys go hot air balloon. You can't control those things.
It must have taken 30 seconds total.
Oh, okay.
And we just went up 15 feet and down 15 feet. And I was like, was that the warm up? Was that what's going on? And nope, that was it.
I don't like hot air balloons because you have no control in the sky. And if you get gusted by wind, you can crash. You have no control up there. You can't steer that thing.
But I mean, you only do it when it's like certain weather conditions.
The weather can change pretty fast.
Well, you just gotta live your life, man.
I'm not going to die in a hot air balloon.
I would die in a hot air balloon.
That's not how I'm going out.
Okay, anyways, that was a big sidetrack.
Yeah, so they did their hot air balloon rides, and they had a little party. They had a little party at the bar. They got lit, reflecting on their time. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it was really cute.
I wrote Meagle again, because what the fuck is that name?
Yeah, they, like, at the little celebration they were having, everyone was like, Meagle is like so sweet, whatever. I think they just wanted to throw us off the scent that like she was going to get the gold star.
Yeah, they wanted to trick us.
Yeah.
And then Jared's smart and all, but I get vibes from him that he spent all of his college years high on his ass.
Yeah.
He's the type of guy who had like his own 2-liter soda bottle grav bong that he ripped like, before and after class.
I think you're right. And just like did that, played video games.
Repeat. Yeah. He's going to invent time travel, apparently, or teleportation.
I mean, he does seem really smart.
He does. But he also seems like someone who indulges in herbs and medicine. So they do like that whole nomination thing. Meagle was nominated. Jared. Do you think Zach deserved a star?
No.
Especially after nominating himself. I didn't have respect for that.
Well, we have to talk about that whole thing with Zach.
Yeah, we do. Do you want to tackle that?
Well, yeah. It was just kind of annoying. So like they're doing that thing where everyone comes in and says who they want to get the gold star, and Zach walks in and immediately starts crying, which Greg called him out on it. Like, it looked like a fake cry.
Yeah.
And he was just like, I'm just getting so emotional because every day, like, I set goals for myself and like, this is my last chance to get the gold star, whatever. And I guess Greg was kind of like laughing at him. And so he storms out, but then they show him like totally freaking out, and he storms back in just crazy crying, yelling, and he's like, "You guys are the worst people I've ever met." And they're like, "Dude, like, calm down." Like,
yeah, we respect you. We respect you.
Like, let's chill out. Let's relax. That was it.
And DK is like, it was like upset. Like, how do you not like laugh at him and say you respect him? It's like, well, DK, there's a thing called being an adult and try to defuse a situation. Would you rather that Greg keep calling him out? Or would you rather that Greg settle the beef now and not turn this into an incident?
Yeah. Like, let's just move on.
Yeah. So I didn't think Zach deserved it. Nominating himself, what a shitty move.
Jared did the same thing, weirdly enough.
Yeah, but Jared, like, can get away with it because he's bonkers. Clinically bonkers.
So it was Zach, Jared, Alex, and Migley were up for the star.
Yeah. Which is the first time it's been like a four-way thing.
Yeah. It was a real toss-up.
And then I love the thing where they're like talking about like investing, like who should get it, Alex or Jared. And I was just thinking, like, Alex is a way better investment in terms of actually inventing something practical. Yeah, sure, Jared's smart, but he's like trying to invent like time travel and teleportation.
Yeah.
Alex is more likely to cure cancer. And you know what? Yeah. We can't say that they're not the next great thinkers because Alex is like our age now. So he hasn't really had time to cure cancer yet. We'll see.
We'll see.
So Alex won the gold star, which is sweet.
He got up there and gave the cutest little speech.
I know. He's a little smush ball.
He was like, "This is for all the 9-year-olds that are thinking, even if there's 14 and 15-year-olds out there, like, don't give up. Keep trying." Like,
yeah.
And then he said that.
My little buddy.
Oh, hey, buddy.
Little Coco Pelly.
Cute. Steve is showing me a
Coco Pelly.
I don't know what that is.
I don't remember what tribe it's from, but it's a rain god.
Oh, cute. Yeah. The weird host guy asks Alex what he's going to do with the money, and Alex is like, "I think I'm going to give it to my children and grandchildren."
It's 20K. Dude, I feel like Alex...
9 years old.
I feel like Alex is already married.
He also says, "I think that my family is going to tell me to
save this
gold." Yeah, like, save this gold as long as I can, because I think gold prices are going up right now.
It's not worth it. I hope he cashed in.
But, dude, like, he's 9 years old. How does he even know what that means?
I have no idea. This kid's like, really smart.
The market value of gold is going up. He knows that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, what? This I don't even really get what that means.
I don't know. But like, I hope they cash in, because 20K is always 20K. Gold fluctuates a lot. Unless at the time gold was worth more than 20K, I think
I don't think they were letting their 9-year-old make the financial decision.
I hope not. He also brought up a good point about the paradox of 20K, where 20K is a lot of money, but it's also not that much money.
Yeah. And he like explained to the whole group what a paradox is.
Yeah, because it's like, what? That's half of a really bad salary for living in Manhattan.
That's literally like, if you go to a private university, it's a third of a year of college. Third of 1 year of college.
If you're trying to go to NYU, NYU is like 90K a year. So like, that's nothing. I did not go to NYU, but
no,
that's an expensive place. That one always flabbergasts me how expensive that place is. But yeah.
Even I went to Mystery College.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say where you actually went. I was concerned for a second.
No.
Misfitville. This is our teacher, Coco Pelly.
Mystery College and Mystery
Idaho. We went to school in Idaho, everyone.
Yep.
In Bismarck, Idaho.
Where we lived before.
We live in Bismarck, Idaho, everyone. I think that
I only... live in the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah. Okay. So after that, they make a rash, not a rat. Oh my God. Words aren't working right now. The council decides to permanently close down the what's it called? The arcade.
So people can
get to know each other better the last 4 days.
Which is like kind of bullshit, but whatever. They're like, yeah. Some girl got up there and she was like, we've been here for 40 days and we don't even know each other. And it's like, all right, you're going to get to know each other in the last four.
I know, right?
That's not even worth it.
Kid Nation is like summer camp, only a lot worse because it's not fun.
Well, I mean, it's summer camp and the fact that like your parents send you away.
And you meet new people and form friendships, only you're not having fun at this summer camp.
There's literally no fun to be had.
Yeah. There's always work. All right. So then they have like a campfire thing and they talk about stuff and how like they're sad that they're not going to see each other, but also excited to go home, which is sad. Mm-hmm. And then at the very end, Jared is playing with a fucking scorpion.
Yeah. That was psycho.
Yeah. He could have gotten stung. And actually, the larger scorpions don't kill you, but still, he could have died.
Jared's a wild one.
You could have been DED dead.
D-E-E dead.
All right, so that wraps up Kid Nation. We're gonna close out the show now.
Only one episode of Kid Nation left.
Yeah, and we might have a surprise for you guys related to Kid Nation coming up, but you'll have to subscribe to the newsletter to find out. Thanks for listening, folks. As always, if you like our show, please subscribe, leave us a review, rate, subscribe. We're going to start reading, not this episode, maybe next, maybe the next one after that, depending on what we get reviews in. We're going to start reading off some of your funny and nice reviews again.
If you guys want to hear more from us, you should check us out on our website. That's also where you can subscribe to our newsletter. It's misfitsandmysteries.com. We also are on all social media platforms at podcast_misfits.
Yes. And we're going to have Ladies Fright Podcast on next week. Check them out. They're a great show. I think that's really it. Stay spooky, Misfits.
Stay spooky, guys. Bye.